kind of just getting ourselves ready. Okay, let's begin. I think we're ready for Pasuk Bet, is what I think. Right? Chapter 1. Okay. Do we have a Tanakh? Does everybody have a Tanakh? Chapter 1. I'm going to give David a Tanakh. Okay. Vahi acharei mot Moshe eved Hashem. After the death of Moshe, this pasuk we've discussed, so I'm just going to review it quickly. Moshe described as eved Hashem. Moshe is described as God's servant. Yehoshua is described as Moshe's servant. There's a hierarchy that's intentional. Moshe eved Hashem, v'yomer Hashem el Yehoshua, menun misharet Moshe, lemor. God's instructions to Yehoshua, Yehoshua is misharet Moshe, whereas Moshe is eved Hashem. Yehoshua served Moshe, Moshe served God. Moshe avdi met. Yeshua, Moshe is no longer. Moshe, my servant, has died. Ve'ata kum avor et hayarden hazeh. Cross this Jordan. Ata v'chol ha'am hazeh el ha'aretz asher anochi noten lehem levnei Yisrael. You, this people, into the land which I have given to Bnei Yisrael. Kol makom asher tidroch kaf rag lechem bo, lechem netativ. Any place where your feet will march, I have given to them, referring or to you. I have given it to you, to the Jewish people. Kasher dibarti el Moshe, exactly as I have instructed Moshe. Mehamidbar v'halavanon hazeh, v'ad hanahar hagadol nahar prat. From this midbar. It's an interesting word. It's usually translated as desert. It's probably one of the classic mistranslations in Tanakh. Midbar is not a desert. Desert in Hebrew is a shmama. Mm-hmm. Desert in Hebrew, a real desert is called a shmama, because a real desert is desolate, and the desolation is a shmama. Midbar is not a desert. Midbar is an open area of grazing land. You ever hear the expression lahadbir tzon? Lahadbir tzon is to lead sheep to graze.
So when the Chumash or the Nav uses midbar, that's what it means, grazing?
It's essentially a large area. It's not built up vegetation-wise. It doesn't have trees. It doesn't have a lot of rain, but it's not a desolation. It's not like the Sahara. Right? There's always vegetation. There's grass. There's always. That's where you find.
I know.
That's where you find Moshe. All of the shepherds of Israel take their flock out to the midbar to go grazing. It's like imagine to yourself taking your flock out to graze in the Sahara Desert. It doesn't work. But a midbar is not a desert. A midbar is a place where you are madabir tzon, where you take your flock to lead your flock, which is essentially an open area of grazing land.
Also translated as wilderness, which is more of a
which wilderness means. Is probably something in between.
Right.
It's probably closer to the biblical context of a midbar than a desert is, the wilderness. But there's certainly vegetation in the midbar. There's always rain in the midbar. And if you go into the Negev, there's rain, there's grass. It's not, call it the Negev desert, but it's not really a desert. When you compare it to real deserts, it's practically an oasis. So you have to put things in perspective. Be that as it may, Hamidbar, the Midbar, is a geographic location. There are a number of areas in Israel that are known as the Midbar. In this particular case, I'll show you on a map momentarily which midbar we're talking about. Meha midbar v'halavanon hazeh, from this Midbar and this Lebanon, the Ad Nahar Hagadol Nahar Prat, till the great river of the Euphrates. Kol Eretz Achitim v'ad Hayam Hagadol, all of the land of the Chitim until the great sea, which is the Yam Hagadol, is the Mediterranean. Mevo Hashemesh in the direction that the sun sets, which is west. So the West Sea is the reference again to the Mediterranean. Kashe debarti. Yegvuchem. That will be your borders. Lo yitzev ish lefanecha kol yemei chayecha. All the days of your life, nobody will stand against you, meaning you will be victorious in all of your efforts. Kasher hayiti im Moshe eyeimach. As I was with Moshe, I will be with you. Lo arpecha v'lo e'ezveka. I will not abandon you. I will not leave you or make you fail. The rest of this paragraph I'm going to stop. I'm going to leave for now. Series of expressions of Chazak V'Amatz, be strong and courageous, that's a topic unto itself. B'zot Hashem, that'll be our next unit. For now, I want to focus on this first part, which is essentially a description of the borders of the land of Israel. Which brings us into a fascinating and fundamentally important issue, which is, what are the borders of the land of Israel? Very timely topic, too.
I'll just sit there. It's bizarre what the rest of us have.
That is true about, I find that often in Torah learning. You're kind of interesting. Anyway.
Maybe you want to bring them a copy of
this. Yeah, I could, but I don't think they would let me through the doors. But.
And I don't think that's what you want.
We'll get to all of this. But I actually want to start with a very simple question. The focus here to Yehoshua is an instruction to cross the Jordan. Kum avor et hayarden. Get up and cross the Jordan. And you have to stop and wonder, what is the significance of crossing the Jordan, given the fact that the borders of the land of Israel, at least the way they're described here, are incredibly expansive. Just to give you a sense of what we're talking about. Now, by the way, I've prepared a whole bunch of maps for you. So, I want to just take one and pass them out. All the maps that I'm going to use on the overhead today are here in this little photocopied section, so you'll have them. But just to give you a sense of what we're talking about, take a look at this map now.
Is this the first one?
Yeah, if you don't mind. Yeah. The first one, depending on how you're looking at it, but
63. Page 63.
Okay. There's a major issue as to exactly what borders of the land of Israel we're talking about. We will address that issue momentarily. But before you, without getting into the technicalities of it, clearly the text describes the boundary of the land of Israel as Mehamidbar v'halavanon hazeh v'ad nahar agadon nahar prat, from the Midbar and the Levanon to the Euphrates, kol eretz achitim, the land of the Chittites, up through till the Yam Hagadol. So just to give you a perspective, this in biblical terms is called the Midbar Hagadol, the great wilderness. Today this is called Jordan and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is essentially the vast majority of Saudi Arabia is a giant desert or a wilderness or a midbar. That's called the Midbar HaGadol. And it actually walks all the way up and it follows the banks of the Euphrates River. There's no water, natural water body in this entire region, which is why it's called the Midbar. So this is the Midbar HaGadol, this is the Lebanon, the area that is today Jordan, up through Turkey.
I mean Jordan, Lebanon.
I mean Lebanon, Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey. Eretz Achitim, Jordan, and Turkey, Asia Minor. This is the Euphrates River. This is the Nile. There's two rivers that will be identified momentarily. One is Nachal Mitzrayim, which is this Nachal. I think it's called Vadi Al-Arish. And then there's the larger body of water called the Nile River. We will get to that in a moment. But if I look at the borders that are described here, from Nahar HaGadol, Nahar Prat, to the Mediterranean, Hamidbar v'Halavanon, essentially, what are we describing? Pretty much. We're talking about a boundary that goes from the Mediterranean, from the Euphrates to the Nile, which is not mentioned here, but usually they go together. Hamidbar HaGadol v'Lebanon. The Midbar and the Lebanon and Kol Eretz Achitim. That would be enough elbow room for us? That's a pretty big border. And in order to get there, Yehoshua is told, Kum avor tayadeh, cross the Jordan. It's a little bit odd to tell Yehoshua, here are your borders, from the Euphrates to the Mediterranean. Now to get there, cross the Jordan. Last I checked, they're sitting in Arvot Moab, which is here. They are sitting in somewhere between this border already. So why is it so significant that they have to cross the border? They have to cross the Jordan. That's the first clue that we have that there's something amiss in this description of the borders of the land. Sorry. Yeah, wow. There's no way to turn off just these front lights, is there? Okay.
There's another switch over there, but I don't think it works on that. It's just a random switch.
Well, it's just a random
switch. I was waiting for the screen to go up or something.
You're right on my head. Unrealized expectation.
All right. So, we're going to deal with the borders of the land of Israel in a moment, but I want to... The notion of crossing the Jordan... I want to take a step back for a second and try to understand what the meaning of crossing the Jordan is. What's the significance of the instruction to Yeshua, Kum avor tayadein? It's not just the geographic direction, because the next chapter and a half is going to be an extensive description of how they cross the Jordan. They're going to cross the Jordan not by walking across or wading across or even building themselves rafts to get across. They're going to cross the Jordan, Kriyat Yamsuf style. They're going to split the Jordan. They're going to stop the waters coming down. They're going to create a wall of water. They're going to recreate the miracle of Kriyat Yamsuf in order to cross the Jordan. And you have to stop and ask yourself, well, two questions. Number one, there's not that much water in the Jordan as it is. It's like kind of, and it's this wide. So that's a question we will address much later. But you also have to ask, what's the significance? Why? At the end of the day, they're sitting in the center of this massive land of Israel that in its expanded borders carries us from the Euphrates to the Mediterranean. Who cares about the Jordan? Kum avor tayadein. Because I'm going to give you the entire region from the Midbar to the Lebanon, from the Euphrates to the Nile. Therefore, cross the Jordan. Something's missing. Something's missing. So there's two ways of looking at this. One certainly we'll get to is the issues of the borders and the boundaries and what they are. But I think before we get to the borders of the land of Israel, we get to let's take a step back and try to understand what crossing the Jordan means to Yehoshua, or what it means to B'nai Israel. Go back to, for a moment, the beginning of Parashat Va'etchanan. The beginning of Parashat Va'etchanan is Devarim, chapter 3. Where I want you is in chapter 3. Starts at the end of chapter 3. Bottom of, it's Reish Ayin Vav in my Tanakh. I don't know what it is in your Tanakh.
Same one.
Same one. Okay. Chapter 3, verse 23, Perek Gimel Pasach Chaf Gimel, Va'etchanan el Hashem Va'etahi Lemor. Let me give you the context. Moshe, last speech he makes to the people, he is, all of Sefer Dvarim begins this long declaration of a review of the Torah that Moshe goes through with Bnei Israel before he dies. At the very beginning of that, he reviews a little bit of how why it took them 40 years to get to where they are, considering it's an 11-day journey from Mitzrayim to Kadesh Barnea, which is the southern border of Eretz Yisrael. He has to explain to Bnei Yisrael why it took him 40 years to get through an 11-day journey. And it's not because Moshe couldn't ask for directions, right? There was a reason for taking 40 years. And now, picking up on the theme of the fact that it took them 40 years to get here, Va'etchanan el Hashem ba'etahi lemor. I beseeched God. Tchina. Va'etchanan. Like tachanun. I beseeched God at that time, saying, Hashem Elokim, atah ha'chilot leharot et avdecha et godlecha ve'et yadcha chazaka. God, you began, ha'chilota, you began to show your servant, that's meaning Moshe, your greatness and your strong hand, godlecha ve'et yadcha chazaka. Asher miyav shamayim uva'aretz asher yasecha masecha gvuratecha, nobody like you in the heavens or on the earth. Therefore, Ebrana ve'ere et ha'aretz ha'tova shebe'ever ha'yarden. Let me cross over the Jordan. Let me cross over and see this great, this good land, which is on the other side of the Jordan, this good mountain, and the Lebanon. Va'yitaber Hashem bi lema'anchem. V'lo shama elai. God was angry at me because of you, and he did not listen. God said to me, Al tosef taber alai od b'davar hazeh, do not again speak to me on this matter. Alei rosh ha-pisgah, go to the top of the viewpoint, the lookout. V'sai necha yama v'tzafona v'temanu mizracha. And look, north, south, east, and west. Ure'e v'inecha, see it with your own eyes. Because you will not cross this Jordan. Instruct Yehoshua, strengthen him, tell him to be courageous. He will lead this people, he will go before them. He will cause them to inherit the land which you shall see. How many requests does Moshe make, and how many requests does God reject or approve? That's a trick question. How many requests does Moshe make? How many requests does God reject or approve? Simply put, how many requests does he make?
One.
Which is?
Let me cross and see the good land.
So how many requests does he make?
Oh.
I had one request. Some people said to cross and some people said to see. So how many requests does he make?
Okay.
Two.
To cross and to see.
They are two different requests. How do I know they're two different requests?
Because see.
Because God allowed him to see, but not to cross.
Right.
Now I'll read it again. Same passage. Now I'm going to read it a second time. By the way, this... Okay. That's the other set of pages that you get from today. This isn't going to work. Same text. I'm just going to read it again. This time, you'll see it. Vatkonanu Hashem be'et leilemor. I cried out to God, saying, Hashem Elokim, ata hachilote leharot et avdecha godlecha ve'kivcha chazaka. You began to show me your strong hand and outstretched arm, who was like you, etc. Ebrana ve'eret et ha'aretz hatova. Let me cross over and let me see this good land. Be'asher be'ever hayarden, on the other side of the Jordan. Aha hatov ezev ha'levanon. God's answer, Vayitaber Hashem, that is not clear.
There you go.
I'm seeing double. I don't know about you, but I'm seeing.
The best
one?
It's
fuzzy.
I'm
going to see double.
Okay.
I think it's time for Epstein to get a new overhead projector.
I think it's the light.
I'm seeing double. Enough, don't speak about this again. Lift your eyes, watch, see, east, west, north, south. It's interesting to me that he's told to look east. He's sitting in Eva Hayarden, he's sitting in Jordan, he's sitting in the plains of Moab. The Jordan is to his west, and he's told to look north, south, west, and east. Interesting. It's almost as if he's sitting in the middle. And yet, he's told, Ure'e be'enecha. You can see with your eyes. Ki lo ta'avor ata Yarden. But you will not cross the Jordan. And again, Safet Yoshua. Instruct Yoshua. Hu ya'avor lifnei ha'aretz. He will cross into the land. He will cause him to inherit ha'aretz asher tir'eh. The land which you will see. Moshe makes two requests. He wants to see the land, and he wants to cross over into the land. And he's told, request A, he can see. Request B, to cross over, that he can't do. In contradistinction to the door of the Meraglim, when the spies went to Eretz Yisrael and came back, and everybody starts to cry, the decree against that generation was specifically, Im yir'u et ha'aretz asher nishbati la'avotam, v'chol mena'atzai lo yir'uha. That those who rebelled against God will not see the land. Moshe is not in that category. Moshe is entitled to see the land. The only thing he's not entitled to do is to cross over the Jordan. So I come back to my question. You're sitting in the middle of the land of Israel. Clearly he's in the middle. When he's told to look at the land, he's told to look north, south, west, and east. So we're not talking about the boundaries or the borders of the land of Israel. There's something else about crossing the Jordan specifically that Moshe is denied, even though he's looking at the boundaries of the land of Israel literally in surround sound. It's 360 degrees. So what's the magic of crossing the Jordan? I'll go one step further. You have on the source page that I just gave you a medrash. My apologies, I was putting the source pages together late, and I didn't have a chance to put the English translation on. So I'll summarize for you essentially the gist of it. I'll read pieces of it if you will. Source number one. It's a medrash in Devarim Rabbah. Very famous medrash. I don't know if you've ever encountered it. I was looking for it long and hard because it's an obscure source. And I found that actually it's not in the traditional Devarim Rabbah, it's in a critical edition of the Devarim Rabbah. But it essentially is a medrash in which Moshe Rabbeinu asks God to go into the land of Israel, and Moshe says no. And God says no. And Moshe says, look, you won't let me go and be the leader. I understand that. But I'm still interested in going into the land of Israel. Let me at least go, let Yeshua lead, and let me go in as his disciple. Kach al taba machshava v'kach minago shel olam, dor dor v'doshav, dor dor uparnasav, dor dor umanhigav. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Moshe, every generation has one leader. Every generation has its leader. Every generation has its manhig. Ad achshav hayachal kachal shevet lefanai. Up until now, it was your lot to serve me. Achshav natal ta'atachal kachad ve'gi asha'asha Yeshua tamidchal shevet. Now it's no longer your time. Now it's the time of your servant, Yeshua, to serve me. Amar le Ribbono Shel Olam im mipnei Yeshua talmidi ani met. You're going to tell me to die in order to allow Yeshua to go in? I'll make you a new deal. Let Yeshua be the leader, and I'll go in as Yeshua's disciple. Amar le Kadosh Baruch Hu, im ata rotzeh lasot kach, lech aseh. So the Medrash says, fine, Moshe, God tested Moshe, and he said, you want to do it that way? Go ahead, you go be Yeshua's Talmud. So the next day he got up and he allowed Yeshua to give the shiur, and he sat in the back row. There's a lengthy description here which I skipped about the people and how the people respond, and they ask Yeshua, what does it mean? And Moshe doesn't understand what's going on. And there's a whole arichas here about the shiur that Yeshua gives, that Moshe is sitting there in the back. And finally, Amad Moshe v'kafaf komato, וניח ידו על פניו ונתעלמו עיניו של יהושע ולא ראה אותו כדי שלא יצטער וישלים עצמו אליו. Moshe hid his face. He didn't want Yeshua to see that Moshe was sitting in the back of the shear. He didn't want Yeshua to be embarrassed. אמרו ישראל למשה, משה רבנו, למדנו תורה. The people noticed that Moshe was there. They turned to Moshe and said, Moshe, you teach us. אמר להם, אין לי רשות. I don't have the permission. It's Yeshua's time. Amale, ein anu menechim otcha. We're not going to let you do this. We're not going to let you sit in the back of the shir. Yatzat batko v'yamalehem limdum Yeshua. So a voice from heaven came out and said, no, you learn from Yeshua. Kiblu alehem leishev v'lemod miYeshua. So the people agreed. They sat and they let Yeshua give the shir. Yeshav Yeshua barosh u'moshe mimino u'bnei Aaron mismolo. Yeshua then forced out of the front. Moshe, when they finally discovered that he was there, they put him on the right. They put Aaron and his on the left, or his Aaron's sons on the left. Haya Yoshev v'daresh mifnei Moshe, and Yeshua gave the shir. L'tasha'a amar Moshe ribono shel olam, ad achshav bikashti chaim, achshav hareni nafshi misra b'yadecha. There's a lengthy piece here I skipped about the anguish that it causes him. And he turns to the Baruch Shalom and he says, I can't do this. I thought I could, but I can't. Moshe says to God, take my life. It's a powerful medrash, a very beautiful medrash. In its context, I think it's addressing a different issue, which is the relationship between student and teacher. But for our purposes, I think it reflects something else as well, which is that the issue between Moshe and Yeshua is not an issue of boundary. It's an issue of leadership. What Moshe is told is he can't cross the Jordan, or he can't lead the people into the land of Israel because he can't be the leader. So at that moment in the Medrash, he says, fine, I'll go in not as the leader. And the Rosh Hashem says, okay, let's see if you can handle that. And I don't think it's a function of the ego that Moshe can't handle it. I think it's a function of the role. The people won't let him change that role. You can't arbitrarily and artificially change that role so simply. But the issue between Yeshua and Moshe is not an issue of boundary. It's an issue of dor umanhigav, each generation and its leadership. And essentially, to cross the Jordan is not a geographic boundary. To lead the people across the Jordan is a function of leadership. The one who leads them across the Jordan begins the conquest of the land of Israel, is the leader of the Jewish people. He's the general, he's the commander-in-chief, he's the king, he's the manhig, he's the navi, however you want to call it. That's the leadership role. And it's in that role that Moshe is told you can't go into the land of Israel. You want to see the borders? The borders are huge. They're all the way to the Euphrates. I want to see them with beauty. I want to see what Eretz Yisrael looks like, isn't that? I'll show you a slideshow. But that's not the issue. What's driving Moshe to say, I want to cross the Jordan, is that I want to continue to be the leader of this people. And what the Rabbanu Shlom's answer to him is, you can't. It's not your time anymore. Now it's the time for Yeshua. Yeshua is going to be the leader. Yeshua will therefore lead them across the Jordan. Kum avor tayarden. When God says to Yeshua, cross the Jordan, is essentially a way of saying, Yeshua, it's time to stand up and take on the role of leader of the Jewish people. And if you go back to the opening phrase of the Sefer, what does God say to Yeshua? Take a look at Pasuk Bet carefully. Take a look at Perek Aleph Pasuk Bet. It's what I call a non sequitur. Right? Before we get to Kum, start from the beginning of the Pasuk. Two phrases in this Pasuk which are a non sequitur unless you understand this link between them. God says to Yeshua, let's actually expand the context. Verses 1 and 2. Moshe, God spoke to Yehoshua, servant of Moshe, after the death of Moshe, servant of God. What does God say to Yehoshua? Opening statement. Moshe avdi met. Moshe, my servant, has died. Nu, Yehoshua, tell me something I don't know. Tell me something I don't know. God says to Yehoshua, opening phrase, opening statement. Moshe avdi met. Does he have to pour salt in the wound? And then, as if a complete non-sequitur, v'yata kum avor et hayarden. Now come and cross the Jordan. What's the connection between these two statements? Unless you understand unless you connect it via what I'm saying here today, which is crossing the Jordan is not a geographic issue. It's a statement of leadership. It's a statement of continuing the hanhagah, continuing the leadership of the people to take them to the next step, precisely the step that Moshe was denied. Moshe was not entitled to be the leader of the next generation. That's Yeshua's role. But for Yeshua to take on that role is a major, major effort. Because he's stepping into the shoes of a figure that is truly larger than life. How do you walk into Moshe Rabbeinu's shoes? Put yourselves for a moment in the position of Yeshua. Moshe was larger than for most of them, Kaviyachol larger than God himself. And Moshe was everything from Yetziat Mitzrayim, through the Midbar, through Matan Torah, through Kriyas Yamsuf, through the 40 years of the desert. Moshe was everything to them. He was their link to God, he was their link to Torah, he was their link to Eretz Yisrael, he was their link to Jewish history. They'd be slaves in Egypt if it wasn't for Moshe from their perspective. Moshe's gone, and Yeshua has to take over. Enormously difficult for him. especially for a man who's identified his entire being and core of his entire identity, has been to be Mishaveret Moshe. When the end of Chumash ends, it's interesting, Chumash ends when the people are crying over the death of Moshe. The end of Sefer Devarim, chapter 34. Vayivku b'nei Yisrael et Moshe b'avot Moab 30 yom. B'nei Yisrael cried for Moshe for 30 days. Vayitmu yemei b'chi evo Moshe. At the end of the days of mourning for Moshe of 30 days. Yeshua Benun malei ruach chochma ki samach Moshe tidav alav. Yeshua Benun is the one who is designated as leader. Vayishmu ela b'nei Yisrael. Sort of a general statement about the next generation that b'nei Yisrael followed Yeshua. And then, the next two psukim. V'lo kam navi od b'Yisrael k'moshe asher yida'o Hashem panim o panim. No other navi ever arose like Moshe who could know God face to face. With all the wonders and signs that God did and told Moshe to, and sent Moshe to take them out of Egypt before Paro and all his land. L'chol yada chazaka l'chol mara gadol asher asa Moshe l'enei Yisrael. All of the great wonders and miracles that Moshe did for B'nai Yisrael. That's what Chumash ends. It's an unbelievable ending. Chumash doesn't end with a description of the relationship between God and Israel. Chumash ends with the largesse, with the greatness of Moshe. Unprecedented, unparalleled. Will there ever be another Moshe? No. Yeshua, come. Get up. It's your turn. How do you walk into Moshe's shoes? That's the challenge that Yeshua will face from the get-go. And it's a challenge that we will come back to many times to address. How successful is he, and what way does Yeshua emerge as a leader to, on the one hand, follow in the footsteps of Moshe and link himself to Moshe, and on the other hand, to forge his own path because Moshe's gone. On a much lower scale than the Havdil Elef Alfei Havdalot, it's essentially the challenge any leader faces stepping into a succession position. For Yehoshua, stepping into Moshe Rabbeinu's shoes, multiply it 100-fold or 1,000-fold. So I see this expression Kum Avoy Te'adein as a symbol. This is where your leadership will begin. It's the first act that you will do to demonstrate you are in control. And it's fascinating and intentional that the first act that Yeshua will do as leader of the Jewish people will be a repeat performance of Kriyat Yamsuf. Is it necessary to split the Jordan to get across? Hardly. What I will suggest to you a little bit later in the course is that I think the Jordan in those days was much larger than it was today. And I think there's textual evidence for that. But even so, there are ways to get across a river without having to miraculously split it. It's not like the Egyptians are chasing him. Moshe had to split the sea because the Egyptians were on their backs. They had the sea on the one hand and the Egyptians on the other. So God said to Moshe, okay, there's only one way out of this, and that's through the Yamsuf. Yeshua doesn't have to split the sea to get across. So why does he do it? Or why does God tell him to do it?
It's also symbolic.
Of?
To represent what had been and the place that he is taking.
It's a continuity to Moshe. Yeshua will begin by a repeat performance of the miracles of Moshe Rabbeinu, without question. Because the people need to see that. The people need to see that A, there's a continuity, and B, that Yeshua is capable, is as capable and as designated and as divinely appointed as Moshe was. Moshe had Yetziat Mitzrayim, he had Kriyat Yamsuf, and he had Mamar HaSinai to legitimate his credentials. What did Yeshua have? A ceremony of Moshe putting his hands on his head. Where's the loyalty of the people going to come from? So Yoshua has to go through a transition that will essentially start exactly where Moshe Rabbeinu started. Kriyat Yamsuf and Matan Torah. And we will see the combination. Those are the two major events that formed the essence of Moshe's identity as a leader. Yitzhi Mitzrayim, which culminates in Kriyat Yamsuf, and Mamar HaSinai, which defines the both the miraculous and the spiritual legacy of Moshe. Yoshua will do a repeat performance of both.
I would argue that works against Yoshua, because it really doesn't differentiate him at all. And
not at the beginning.
What it does is it sort of makes him a pale comparison. It's not Yom Suf, it's the RNA. It's sort of...
Moshe is the sun and Yeshua is the moon. And that's exactly how Yoshua understood his role.
But this is in terms of leadership. I understand that.
So Yoshua will lead them in a different path, but not at the beginning. Yeshua will lead them in a different direction, completely. Part of the theme of Sefer Yeshua is to see exactly where Yeshua leads them that's a different direction than Moshe led. But not at the beginning. If Yeshua started by walking into Bnei Yisrael and saying, okay folks, miracles are over, we're starting a new natural order of things, pick up your arms and let's go. They'd walk out, they'd say, Yeshua, deal with it yourself. Yeshua has to start exactly where Moshe started. Because there's this shadow, it's the elephant in the room. You can't escape it. You can't deny it. You try that and there's going to be a rebellion in your hands. He has to start where Moshe starts. He has to begin as the leader that Moshe was. And the Kum Avoy HaTorah then is essentially that demonstration. Cross the Jordan, as they say in Hebrew, Begadol. Don't just cross it. You make a lot of noise when you cross it. This is not just build yourself a couple of rafts and walk across the river. You're going to make a statement that all of Canaan is going to hear and see. And Bnei Yisrael are going to hear and see. Avor HaTayadeh. Then you can begin a new chapter. But not until you step into that position of leadership. So there's a very critical message here, I think, in terms of the role of the crossing of the Jordan. It's not just a geographical issue. It's a leadership issue. Having said that, I want to begin to address one of the most complex issues in terms of Chumash, one of the most complex sugyot as a whole. The topic of the borders, the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. As I said at the beginning of the shiur today, a very timely discussion, although certainly in Annapolis, Maryland, they are not taking their cues from our discussion, nor from Sefer Yoshua's at all. But nonetheless, I think that we need to address the question of what is the description of the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael as they are presented to us in Chumash? And part of the reason why that's so critical is because there's a fundamental contradiction at play. And what I want to do with you today, we'll start to trace this contradiction. Mezrat Hashem, next week, my plan is to come up with some resolution of how to... what this contradiction is, what it means, and what its significance is. So let's first talk about the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael as they are described to us here in... Good morning. Joining us? We are solving all the problems of Annapolis. That's what we are doing. We're there. They didn't invite us, but we're having our own Annapolis right here. So what are the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael as they are described here in Yehoshua? Starting with Pasuk Gimel. Kol makom asher tidroch kaf raglechem bo lechem netativ. Every place where your feet step, I will give you. מהמדבר והלבנון הזה ועד הנהר הגדול נהר פרת. From the Euphrates, from the midbar and the Lebanon to the Euphrates, kol eretz ha-chitim ve'ad yam ha-gadol, all of the land of the Hittites up until the Mediterranean Sea. As I was with Moshe, I will be with you. Lo harpacha ve'lo ezveka, I will not abandon you. I will not let you go. I will not let you fail. Psukim that are familiar to us from any point. Well, of course, it's on the board. All right. You have actually, I've charted this out for you actually from on in your source pages as well. Just to give you a sense of, there's two exercises here. Number one, to see another source of the borders of the land of Israel, but also I want you to see how much of Yehoshua is built on the language of Chumash. Yehoshua is not just the story of Yehoshua, and it's not just a Sefer in Nach. Yehoshua, as a text, is written with a constant refrain of language, text, and nuance that parallels passage after passage of Chumash. That's intentional. There's a Gemara that says that had Israel never sinned, they would have received six books. Tanakh would have consisted of six books. If we never sinned, Tanakh would have consisted of six books. They are the five books of the Torah and Sefer Yehoshua. That was the plan. The plan was Chumash to bring us to the borders of Eretz Yisrael and Sefer Yehoshua to bring us into Eretz Yisrael. Mipnei erkashel Eretz Yisrael, the value of Eretz Yisrael, says the Gemara. The problem was that we did fail, we sinned at some point or another, and ultimately, therefore, we found ourselves in Sefer Shoftim, and from Shoftim we found ourselves in Shmuel, and from Shmuel we found ourselves in Malachim. And the rest of Jewish history took on a different complexion. But conceptually, the design was Chumash and Sefer Yehoshua. So the language connection between them is critical. It's almost as if Yehoshua is book number six of Chumash. I'm not sure what we would call Chumash if it had six books, but but here, I don't know how dentists do it. Work backwards. Dentists have to work, everything's backwards. You go right, you're going left. You go left, you go right, because everything's in the mirror. I don't know how they do it. These are the Pesukim in Yeshua that we just read. Devarim Perek Yud Aleph. V'horish Hashem et kol ha-goyim ha-ele mi-lifneichem v'yidashtem goyim gdolim v'atzumim mikem. Go and conquer the land of Israel, conquer nations greater and mightier than thee. Who are the nations greater than mightier than you? I leave that as an open question for now. Considering the fact that the fighting force of Israel is 600,000 soldiers, Israel is not a small force. Remember, the land of Canaan is comprised not of nations. The land of Canaan is comprised of city-states. Each city has its own king, and each city, therefore, has its own army. The king of Yericho and the king of Devir and the king of Hebron and the king of Yushalayim and the king of whatever the cities are, and eventually we'll see in Sefer Yehoshua he lists 31 different kings. Each king has its own army. Against any one of them, the force of the Jewish people, 600,000 soldiers, outnumbers them 10 to 1. So it's a complete misnomer to suggest, and incorrect to suggest, that when we entered the land of Canaan, we were outnumbered. The only reason we could possibly, the only way we could be considered outnumbered is if the city-states of Canaan combined their forces into one. And that's Yeshua's greatest fear. When we get into the tactical plan of Yeshua, we'll see very quickly that Yeshua's biggest fear is alliances between the city-states of Canaan. If he can tackle each one by themselves, he has the upper hand in every battle. If he allows them the time to group into alliances and combine their armies, then he's going to fight an uphill battle. So when we talk about nations of Canaan, goyim gdolim va'atsumim, we're talking about empires. There are no empires in Canaan. One of the great mysteries. Who is he talking about? Kol ha'makom asher tidroch kaf raglechem bo lechem yiyeh. Any place where your feet go, that's where you will get. Sound familiar? These psukim in sequence. Min ha'midbar v'halavanon min ha'nahar nahar prat v'ad ha'yam ha'acharon yiyeh gvulchem. Borders. From the Midbar and Lebanon, from the Euphrates to the Mediterranean. Borders from the Midbar and Lebanon to the Euphrates and until the Mediterranean. Lo yitzev ish bifnechem. Nobody will stand before you. Pachdechem umarachem yiten Hashem alakichem apne kol haaretz. God will put your fear and dread into the nations of Canaan. I will not abandon you. These are psukim that are built directly out of Devarim Yud Aleph, out of the charge to go and conquer the land of Israel. And the description of the boundaries of the borders of the land of Israel. Which are described in terms of from the Euphrates to the Mediterranean, Hamidbar veHalavanon. Okay, so the boundary looks like this. This is the map that should go up on the overhead at Annapolis. And this is, should be the starting point of their discussion. Because this is the map that the Torah defines as the borders of the land of Israel. Just so that we are clear as to what we're talking about. From the Euphrates to the Mediterranean, Hamidbar Gadol v'Halavanon. To understand that the boundary as described here includes what is today Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Israel, and Egypt. That's the starting point.
What I don't understand, okay, is I am a gadol. I'm saying to you, it's too complicated.
Okay, I'll translate for you.
I am a gadol is a gvul. חוף הים זה גבול.
נכון.
נהר זה גבול. למה כשאתה לוקח את הלבנון ואת המדבר, אתה לוקח את זה כאילו, בעצם אתה, אין לך שם תיאור של גבול. איפה הגבול מתחיל? בתחילת הלבנון, בסוף הלבנון,
okay.
בתחילת
so הלבנון? So what your question is essentially that, the question of the Yam HaGadol and the, I'll translate the question first, that the Yam HaGadol or the Mediterranean and the Euphrates are borders. The Midbar and the Lebanon are geographic areas. It's mixing apples and oranges. The answer is essentially that we're not describing borders here. There's only one place in all of Chumash where specific borders are defined. And that's at the end of Parshat Maaseh. Or Matot Maaseh. We'll get there in Sefer Bamidbar, we'll get there as well. But that's the only place in Chumash where it says, this is the border. And here are the corners of the border. And it'll identify specific border markers. In the rest of Tanakh, borders are always defined by geographic regions. Always. There are no specific lines on a map. Even when the Torah will go out of its way to define borders, the borders are defined by a list of cities. Because in biblical times, you didn't draw borders the way we draw borders today. We draw borders with a line on a map. It's a line on a map in biblical times is insignificant. It has no meaning. There is no map. There is only a list of cities. So if a city belonged to a particular tribe, it was, means that it was inhabited by a particular tribe. If a city was given to a different tribe, it meant that that city was inhabited by a different tribe. And the borders could go, if we were to draw the border, it would look like this. Because you have a city here that belongs to Ephraim, and a city here that belongs to Manasseh, and a city here that belongs to Benjamin. Because boundaries are general geographic areas, but specific to the location of where people live. If there's an area between two cities where nobody lives, no man's land, it had zero significance in biblical terms. In modern terms, we like to draw maps. So we draw lines.
In biblical terms, you didn't draw maps, you drew regions. So here's the region, Midbar and Lebanon. Bordered on the one hand by the Euphrates, it goes all the way down here to the Gulf, right, Persian Gulf. So if you want, here are your borders, the Persian Gulf to the Mediterranean. That's your border of the land of Israel. Now, if that's the border of the land of Israel, I also understand goyim gdolim va'atsumim mikem. I understand the empires. I understand that we are up against major forces. Because in this boundary, you have, literally, empires. Egypt is an empire. Eretz HaChittim, the Hittite kingdom, is the largest empire in that region. And the oldest empire. You have Babel, Shinar, Ashur, Assyria, Babylonians. These are empires. In Canaan, you have a whole bunch of tiny little cities. Skirmishes. Each city is a separate city-state with its own king and its own army. But if you're looking at the broader scope of Kol Eretz HaChittim, Mamlechet HaChittim, this was an empire. Egypt was an empire. Well, stand here and say, okay, guys, here's the task in front of us. We are to conquer from the Euphrates and the Gulf of and the Persian Gulf to the Mediterranean. Fine. So that I understand is a task, is a challenge of Goyim Gdolim Batsumim Mikem.
The problem is that clearly that's not the only place where the boundaries of the land of Israel are mentioned. The boundaries of the land of Israel are mentioned in many places, and often as a description of Eretz Canaan. And Eretz Canaan, in this region of the Middle East, Eretz Canaan is not all of this. Eretz Canaan is a very small piece of all of this. Take a look in Bereishit. Chapter 10. Bereishit Perek Yud. Starting with verse, or actually there's only one pasuk Yutet. The children of Noach included Canaan, grandchildren of Noach. And in chapter 10, pasuk Yutet, 19, Torah says, V'yehi gvul ha-Kna'ani. Gvul ha-Kna'ani means the borders of Canaan. The land of Canaan. This is the first place in Chumash where the land of Canaan is mentioned as a concept, and it has specific borders. What are they? Vayi gvul ha-Kna'ani. Mitzidon boacha grara ad Aza. From Tzidon to Grar, to Aza. Boacha Sdoma va'amora va'adma utzvoyim. And to Sdom Amora Adma Tzvoyim and Lasha. Sdom Amora Adma Tzvoyim and Tzohar make up the five cities that are called Arei Kikar, four of which are destroyed in the destruction of Sdom and Amora. Sdom Amora Adma Tzvoyim are destroyed. Tzohar is the one city that is spared in order to allow Lot and his wife and family a refuge. But what are the borders of the land of Canaan?
From Sidon, this is Tzor. Sidon is right here. I'm sorry that it's not on this map, but this is an easy map to work with. From Tzor, with Sidon actually, to Aza, to Sdom and Amora. Sdom and Amora, there's a major dispute among scholars whether Sdom and Amora is east or west of the Jordan River. We like to say it's west of the Jordan River because we like to put it in our territory and go visit Yam HaMelech, and somebody will show you where Lot's wife is and you can have fun. But that's clearly not where Sodom and Gomorrah are. That's clearly not Lot's wife. And it's great for the tour guides, but the most likely Sodom and Gomorrah are outside of the boundaries of the land of Israel, of the land of Canaan. They're most likely on the east side of the Jordan. And it essentially boxes the land of Canaan as the land between Sidon in the north, Gaza in the southwest, and the Jordan River in the east, until Sodom and Gomorrah. The reason I say that is because when Lot chooses to go to Sodom and Gomorrah, he's essentially choosing to repeat what Abraham refused to do. Abraham went down to Egypt because of the famine. He left the land of Canaan. When they come back, Lot, the famine is still raging. Lot decides to leave. He goes to Sodom and Gomorrah. The Torah's description is Vayisa Lot Mikedem. Lot went eastward. And the Gemara says, Hisiya Atzmo Mikadmono Shel Olam, that he went eastward away from the Eternal One of Israel. Which is essentially saying that he repeats the mistake that Abraham made and literally writes himself out of the script. He's not just leaving Abraham, he's leaving the borders of the land of Israel. He's choosing his future outside of Eretz Canaan, Eretz Israel, Eretz Abraham, however it's known as. So the most likelihood it's on the east side of the Jordan. But that's the box. So I have two very very different descriptions of Eretz Israel. I'll go one step further. Take a look at Bereishit Perek Yud Zayin. Bereishit Perek Yud Zayin. Brit Milah. Starting with the beginning of the chapter, 17. Avram is 99 years old. God comes to him and he says to him, Ani kel shakai italech lefanai vayei tamim. I am your God. Behold, walk before me. Vetna briti v'ani uvenecha. I will make my brit between me and you. I will multiply you. You will be exceedingly great. Abraham falls on his face. God says to him, Pasuk Dalet, Ani hine briti itach ve'ita la'av hamon goyim. Here is my covenant. I want you to be a father of a multitude of nations. V'lo yikroot shimcha Avram, v'yash shimcha Avraham. Changes his name. Hifreti utcha from Avram to Avraham. I will make you be fruitful. I will make you multiply. I will be great. I will make you nations. Kings will come from you. Now look, watch what happens in Pasuk Zayin. I will make an eternal covenant between me and your seed after you. Liot lecha lelokim, I will be your God. Ulezaracha acharecha, v'natati lecha ulezaracha acharecha, I will give to you and to your seed after you. Look what he says. Et kol, et eretz migurecha kol eretz Knaan. The land where you lived, the land of Canaan. Now, Abraham did not live Abraham never lived here. And he never lived here. And he never lived in Egypt. Well, he did for a period of time. Eretz Megurecha, the land where you live, Eretz Knaan, is a box. Yeah, you can kind of like this for a second. Right? It's a box. It goes from Tzor to Gerar to stone. That's the box. That's Eretz Canaan. And when the borders of the land of Israel are described in Parshat Maaseh, this is the border that's described, with a little bit of a overlap here because of Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh, as we spoke about. But essentially, this is the land of Israel. This is the land of Canaan. So we have a fundamental contradiction between the description of Eretz Canaan as the promised land and the expansive description of the borders of the land of Israel from the Euphrates to the Nile. That's the contradiction. That's the issue that all the Mepharshim struggle with, or anybody dealing with the issue of the boundaries of the land of Israel will struggle with. There are two very different modes of description of the land of Israel. One seems to describe it in the box of Eretz Canaan, will even in places describe it as the seven nations of Canaan. Chiti, Chivi, Girgashi, Amori, Prizi, Chivi, Canaani, and these are the different peoples that live in this region. Emori, Yevusi, Chivi, Prizi, Canaani. Excuse me? Did I do one? There are some, one place, there are 10 nations, because there's another three, Keni, Knizi, and additional group of three here. Keni, Kinezi, and Kadmoni. So in one place you have 10 nations mentioned. But essentially the seven nations of Canaan, as we call them, Meshiva Amim, are all geographically located in this region of the box. And yet, how many times in Chumash we have a description of the borders of the land of Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates? So one simple solution is to suggest that we have a realistic boundary of the land of Israel and we have a dream, an eschatological messianic dream. Today, we're in the land of Shiva Amim, we have a little box. But, Bezvat Hashem, Bimot HaMashiach, we'll go back to what our borders should be, which are from the Nile to the Euphrates. And that's, I think, probably the simplest resolution to the contradiction, and let's call it the classical interpretation, although by no means all of them are Mefarshim. I'm not 100% convinced that that is certainly not the only solution to the problem, and really a satisfactory solution to the problem. Because it doesn't help us understand Yeshua, for example. Yeshua is not being told, okay, go into the land of Israel, in messianic times we're going to get the boundaries from the Nile to the Euphrates. Yeshua is being told, go and lead your army. Where? Anywhere you want, because your borders are from the Nile to the Euphrates. You know, somebody should have told the Yeshua that the oil's east and would have solved the problem. Could have gone anywhere. Right? No, but God said, Avor Tayadain, you've got to cross the Jordan. What do I need to cross the Jordan for? He's got all this land. Huge. Something's amiss in this description of the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael between the expansive Nile-Euphrates boundary to the much more contained, defined boundary of Eretz Canaan Ligvuloteha, as it is described in Bamidbar.
But it can't be like Idud for him, like go to Avot HaYarden, this is your land, but everywhere in this area that you will need to fight, I will be with you. Because he doesn't say...
But I'm not looking at a local issue related just to Yoshua. It's the same boundary that's given to Abraham. I'll show you. We just read Avraham Perek Yud Zayin, right?
Yeah.
So now take a look at Avraham Perek Tetvav. Tetvav, 15. Next week I'm going to trace all of the sources for you, but I just today I'm just doing a smattering so you get a sense of the issue. Chapter 15, we have the Brit Ben Abtarim, right, the covenant between the parts. Different, two different covenants. God makes with Abraham two separate covenants. One is called Brit Milah, where he promises the land of Israel, Eretz Canaan Ligvuloteha, and the other is Brit Ben Abtarim. In Brit Ben Abtarim, take a look at the end of the chapter, the end of chapter 15.
starting with Pasuk Yudzayin, Yudchet. Vayomahu karat Hashem et Avram brit lemor. God made a brit with Avram saying, L'zaracha natati et ha'aretz hazot, to your seed I have given this land. Which land? Minahar Mitzrayim ad Nahar Agadol Nahar Prat. The land from the Nile to the Euphrates. So, on the one hand, two chapters later, he's going to make a covenant with him and promise him Eretz Kna'an, Eretz Megurecha, the land in which you live, the land of Kna'an. Whereas two chapters earlier, he promised him the Euphrates to the Nile. And Avram doesn't turn around and say, hey, God, what did you do? Two chapters ago, you promised me the world. Now you're giving me a little box. Understand the problem? It's not just a question of Yoshua. Every place in Chumash where the borders of the land of Israel are mentioned falls into one of these two categories. Either the description of the land of Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates, or a description of the land of Israel as Eretz Kanaan, the Kvulotea, a little box of Eretz Kanaan. And if you want, in the source pages that I just gave you, if you take a look at the second page, I've actually given you, I've charted out for you two columns. Looks like this. Right, this is essentially what I'm going to work off next week. All the sources on the right are sources that describe Eretz Yisrael, or the Promised Land, as Eretz Kanaan. And all the sources on the left describe the Promised Land as the Euphrates to the Nile. And you can see that it goes back and forth. There's very, very difficult to find a consistent pattern. So we've run out of time to solve this problem today, which I was not surprised at. My anticipation was to do this in 2 weeks. Bezrat Hashem, next week, we're going to start. I'm going to do a quick review of encapsulate this issue, and then we will offer some resolution of the challenge. How do we have two different descriptions of the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? So stay tuned for part 2.
Thank you.